Hello, and welcome to the FirstGroup Rail update. Throughout the call, all participants will be in a listen-only mode, and afterwards, there will be a question-and-answer session. And just to remind you, this conference call is being recorded. Today, I'm pleased to present Matthew Gregory, FirstGroup Chief Executive, and Ryan Mangold, FirstGroup CFO. Please begin your meeting.
Good morning, and thank you, everyone, for joining us today. I'm joined on the line by Ryan, our CFO, Rachel Borthwick, and Faisal Tabbah. First off, I'm going to run through the headlines of the National Rail contracts that we're announcing today before moving on to discuss some of the commercial terms in more detail. I'll also discuss what it means for our rail portfolio going forward. And finally, I'll look at how this fits with our retained business and our strong credentials and prospects after the North America transactions are completed. The presentation is published on our website, so I'll try to preface my comments with the slide number to help everyone follow along. So let's turn to the headline details, starting on page 2. Yesterday evening, we signed agreements for 2 National Rail contracts with the DfT for our Southwestern Railway and our Trans-Pennine Express train operating companies. These new National Rail contracts, or NRCs, will commence on the 30th of May this year, when the current emergency agreements put in place during the pandemic come to an end. We're very pleased SWR and TPE are in the first wave of these new contracts. As the largest incumbent operator with 4 UK rail contracts, we will benefit from the NRC structure with its more appropriate balance of risk and reward. The government will take on revenue and substantially all the cost risk, so operators can focus on delivering the reliable service that the public wants, as well as innovating and using our commercial expertise to attract more people onto the railway. The terms are in line with our expectations of more consistent and resilient cash generation each year. You'll also have seen that the government has today set out its views on the future of the wider rail industry. These rail reforms will optimise the balance between public and private sectors on the rail, blending the government's policy objectives with our experience, expertise and understanding of what customers want. And we look forward to working with the government and other industry partners to put passenger needs at the core of the railway system as society begins the process of building back better. Moving now on to page 3. The bases of these 2 contracts are broadly the same and are adjusted to reflect the specific targets or initiatives of each train operating company. Looking at the contract terms in a bit more detail, these are 2-year contracts to May 2023, with options for the DfT to extend by up to 2 further years to May 2025. We will earn annual fees, which will consist of a fixed management fee, plus a performance fee that is paid dependent on the delivery of customer-focused metrics. And I'll come back to the fees in a couple of slides time. A key aspect of the NRCs for us is that the DfT will retain all revenue risk. They will also retain substantially all cost risk under an annual budget that we've agreed with them. A large number of the cost categories within the budget are fully on the DfT's risks, for example, variable track charges paid to Network Rail or the price of fuel. But for the remainder, the operator bears the risk of costs in excess of this annual budget unless we agree in advance with the DfT. There are also contractual change mechanisms in place to allow the budget to be increased for items outside of the operator's control or for changes requested by the DfT. Looking at contingent capital, there's also no significant risk here. Our contingent capital obligations for both the SWR and the TPE NRCs total £15 million, significantly below the levels of the old franchises, with only 50% of that amount bonded. There's more detail about the contingent obligations in the appendix, but I can say that there are only a limited number of scenarios in which these lower bond obligations can be called upon, primarily in the event of early termination through default of the contracts. In summary, these are similar commercial terms to those that we expected, offering a significantly better balance of risk and reward. So what does this mean for passengers? Well, turning to slide 4, you can see some of the examples of initiatives that will be delivered under the NRCs. The new contracts provide continuity for customers, employees, and other stakeholders. Initially, both of the TOCs will work with the industry partners and stakeholders to build back patronage. Obviously, that's what's key at the moment. But it's not just about getting patronage to increase. We'll be taking forward a number of initiatives, including upgrading service offerings. Our plans include the introduction of flexible commuter tickets and continuing to move customers towards electronic and mobile ticketing or smart cards. SWR will be introducing 90 new suburban trains, and next-generation onboard superfast Wi-Fi will be introduced via our Evo Rail business. TPE will finish the deployment of their Nova train fleets, and station improvements are planned at Dewsbury, Malton, Manchester Airport in year one, with works at Hull and Middlesbrough for year two. There'll also be a station improvement fund to allow the pipeline development of further opportunities with third parties. And TPE is being contracted by Network Rail to undertake a package of design study work for stations affected by the Transpennine route upgrade, including northern stations. We hope that this will be a precursor to project managing actual works delivery. Both companies will take further steps to improve their sustainability. Sustainability is at the heart of the NRCs. Both TOCs will work in the first year on a decarbonisation roadmap, underpinned by science-based targets, to achieve net zero emissions by 2050 or earlier, consistent with First Group's commitment. Commitments also include working with our suppliers to embed sustainability and influence the carbon emissions of our supply chain. We'll also work with industry colleagues to inform an industry-wide sustainable rail strategy and work with local authorities with a focus on modal integration with sustainable and e-transport solutions. Our sustainability targets will also include reduced water consumption, increased recycling, and zero waste to landfill. And finally, both companies will develop an agile, diverse, and inclusive workforce with the right depths, skills, engagement, and motivation, including the introduction of an enhanced apprenticeship program, with a target of 2.5% of employees being on apprenticeship programs. We'll use this opportunity to encourage further diversity and inclusion, build a succession pipeline, and attract new talent to the railway. Turning over the page, you can see that the fees for the National Rail contracts are made up of two parts, a fixed management fee and a performance-based element. Historically, we've talked about margin percentages, linking profit to revenue. However, the fees are now provided on an absolute pound basis. As a result, they are not dependent on the revenue or the cost base. For our 70% share of the joint venture with SWR, the fixed management fee is £3.3 million per annum. And there's also the opportunity to earn up to an additional £9.9 million, which is the maximum attainable performance fee. For TPE, the fixed management fee is £2.3 million per annum, and there's the opportunity to earn up to an additional £5.2 million. The punctuality and other operational targets required to achieve the maximum level of performance fee are designed to achieve the highest level of service for customers. The performance-based fee is scored against four categories, namely operational performance, customer satisfaction, finance, and then business management. There are three levels for the qualitative scoring, with the middle acceptable rating resulting in approximately two-thirds of the additional fee being payable. And quantitative scores, such as for operational metrics, are measured on different KPIs on a period-by-period basis. There are also potential opportunities for additional incentive fees for industry change projects. For example, TPE supplying project delivery expertise to help deliver the Transpennine route upgrade, which starts this year in earnest and will continue until 2028, transforming the railway in the north of England. And the group will receive an annual dividend from the TOCs, reflecting the post-tax net management and performance fees. And these dividends are expected to be paid in September, following the completion of the audited accounts of the train operating companies. Looking now at page 6, having talked about the contractual terms of the NRCs, I thought it would be worth summarising where we stand with our rail portfolio. The signature of these NRCs now gives us clarity with respect to these two TOCs, but also a clear template and roadmap away from franchising and the emergency agreements. As you can see from the table, SWR, TPE and Avanti have all agreed their termination sums with the DfT, which deals with the historic position on the old franchises. The SWR and Avanti agreements were in line with expectations, and TPE was very much at the lower end of the range. As a result, we've now agreed NRCs for SWR and TPE, which will last until at least 2023, with a two-year option to extend by the DfT. Avanti is currently on an IRMA until March 2022, and we expect this to transition to an NRC at that time, and it has the potential to last up until March 2032. GWR is still on the original Emergency Measures Agreement until June 2021, and we're in discussions about the right way to transition GWR to an NRC. Now, today's announcement gives us much more certainty around the operation of the rail network in the UK, and we remain the UK's largest operator with four DfT contracted operations and a market share of around 27%. This gives us a strong platform from which to grow our business. To this end, we'll continue to develop our open access footprint, bringing the hugely successful Hull Trains back to normality, and with our second operator, East Coast Trains, launching later this year, providing sustainable and value-for-money travel between London and Edinburgh. And we'll also further develop our 5G technological capabilities, which are being rolled out onto our SWR and Avanti railways, as well as our consulting and call centre business. Turning to slide 7, this is really just a reminder that these lower risk and more consistently cash generative rail contracts are a core component of the group's story going forward. As we set out in the announcement of the sale of First Student First Transit, we're leaders in public transportation in the UK already. Through these NRCs, we are getting increasing clarity on the future of rail, and we now have resolved all of the termination sums, removing the link with the past franchises. As a result, our confidence in the sustainable value creation potential of our operations is only increasing. So to sum up, we welcome the William Shapps White Paper issued today, which looks to the future of the UK rail industry and has the expertise, innovation and experience of the private sector rail operators at the heart of the model. National rail contracts leave us well placed for a lower risk, cash generative rail operation on SWR and TPE, and confidence in stability for Avanti and Great Western Railway. We have long called for this transition to a new contract structure with a far better balance of risk and reward, and which benefits customers by a clearer focus on performance, including the introduction of a new set of passenger service metrics. The last year has shown how reliable rail networks are critical to the country's economic, social and environmental objectives, as we kept key workers moving to where they needed to be. And what's more, our services are essential to local communities as they begin to reopen and society begins the process of building back better. Getting more people onto rail is an essential part of decarbonising transport and achieving net zero, and we're ahead of the pack amongst UK operators in sustainability. Overall, today's announcement is a big step towards a successful railway system that works better for passengers and taxpayers while generating more resilient and consistent returns for shareholders. Thank you for listening, and with that, I'll turn it over to questions.
Thank you. If you do wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. If you wish to withdraw your question, you may do so by pressing 02 to cancel. Our first question comes from the line of Jerry Castle from UBS. Please go ahead.
Thank you and good morning, everyone. Three from me. Firstly, contingent obligations. You mentioned kind of capital being freed up. Any kind of comments in terms of degree or, you know, potential further distributions? Secondly, just looking at kind of auxiliary or 5G opportunities, Can you kind of put any numbers behind it in terms of how big 5G or auxiliary opportunities could potentially be for the company? And then just on the performance-based fee scorecard, I mean, how active were you in setting that up? And, you know, how can you give maybe some kind of confidence level in terms of ability to achieve it potentially? Thanks.
Yeah, well, let me cover off all those questions. Look, on the first point about contingent capital, I mean, this is a process that's been in place for many years with the old franchises, and what it did was relied on us signing up to putting bonds in place in the event of problems with the franchises. Now, in terms of our North American sales, The contingent capital was never really a factor in our consideration. So the fact that these are lower doesn't actually affect anything to do with sort of capital distribution. But what it does is reflect the fact that there's just lower risk, and this is all about just risk and reward. The only thing that we've obviously talked about recently around sort of better situations from a pure liability perspective is the Transpennine Express termination sum, which we talked about last week. On the 5G opportunity, I mean, it's an interesting question and one that we're more likely to come back at our full year results to give a bit more clarity around addressable markets levels in a number of these sort of growth opportunity areas. Look, I think the 5G opportunity is an extremely good one. We have developed at First Group sort of proprietary knowledge that is going to allow us to use this sort of MM wave technology to provide super fast 5G Wi-Fi on trains. It's going to be this huge leap ahead of what we're currently offering and what you're seeing on the railway. Now we've done a trial on the Isle of Wight. It works, and that's great. We're on the South Western Railway. We're looking to sort of implement this on a stretch between Earlsfield and Basingstoke. So commuters will see that during this year. And we're also working on getting that working in Avanti as well. So I think these are still sort of, in terms of revenue perspective, this is probably sort of in the tens of millions a year at this stage. But the opportunity to grow with this, both in the UK and international, is pretty broad. And there's a lot of effort going on to develop the sales on that front. But perhaps we'll leave it till the full year results to give you sort of some more clarity on that, and we can talk about all of our growth opportunities together. And then on the performance-based fees, look, what we've laid out is that sort of an acceptable performance, let's say sort of you've got 1, 2, and 3 and hitting the 2 gets you 2/3 of the performance-based incentive. It's fair to say that during the pandemic, all of our franchises hit the top mark. So now they're very different situations, and it will be different when the railways get more busy. But we have a very good track record of managing projects, managing the introduction of new trains, managing the passenger growth, managing stakeholders. So I think we've laid out there what you get if you're acceptable, but we'll clearly be working very hard to get to the top end of the scale.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks.
And just as a reminder, if you do wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad now. Our next question comes from the line of Drew Thomas from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Morning, Matthew. Ask you about, your expectation of being able to bid for other contracts that come up, the sort of pipeline that you might see ahead of you, and I suppose importantly, you're sort of giving us the gross profit numbers here, potentially, gross operating profit numbers for these contracts. But what sort of bid cost should we be expecting you to be putting against these profits in future? So that'd be one question. Another question, and apologies, I was a little bit late on the call, but not entirely clear on the scorecard, but how confident are you that the sort of the history of this sector has been of disputes with Network Rail and compensation claims and not always getting the claims that you think you do or the amounts you think you deserve? To what extent do you think they are now ironed out? And then finally, just coming back on this issue of lower kind of capital commitments. Now, I realise that this stuff was all, I suppose, it was all contingent liabilities. But if I remember rightly, it was counted towards your credit rating. I may be wrong on that, but that's my recollection. So would you expect this to be credit rating positive?
It's a good questions there, Joe. Let's make sure I've got that. So, look, in terms of the contracts, I mean, the way this is working is that the vast majority of the contracts are effectively, provided people agree their termination sums, as we have done on our sort of three franchises, then people are getting directly awarded these new NRCs. So in the short term, we're not expecting there to be a huge amount of bidding. It's about sort of working, using your existing franchises, working with the various industry bodies to focus on growing the rail patronage again and getting people back on the railway. Now, obviously, there are a couple of railways that are being run by the government at the moment, so there may be, there may be some opportunity there. But as these things develop over time, I would expect the bid cost to be far lower than what we had before. And I think, we had bid costs that were in the sort of high single-digit millions before. I'd expect them to be in the low single digits before, because I don't have to forecast, revenue growth. I don't have to have a sort of seven-year model trying to work out the impact of the economic growth in East Anglia or Scotland or wherever it is. So I think the actual process will be a lot more straightforward and will be cheaper. I think in terms of the claims that you talk about, I mean, resolving the termination sums for these three resolves all the claim issues largely. And I think going forward, that is not going to be for our account, as it were. We are going to have to manage through that in the short term whilst the sort of industry works through the white paper and as things change. But it's not going to be for our account. So that's going to be far less of an issue, and again comes back to the point of far less volatility, much more resilient performance fees and fees that you can really understand. I think on the credit ratings,
just on that one, the performance fees are presumably linked in some way to network performance, aren't they? So if Network Rail or whatever it's called, Great British Railways now is failing to deliver what it's committed to, doesn't that impact your ability to generate a profit?
Yeah, I mean, well, look, I think in terms of the Network Rail piece, and I think it will still be Network Rail, that may have some impact sort of on the customer experience. But in terms of our operational performance, I don't think we'll be penalised for Network Rail's performance.
Okay.
Well, I think the vast majority of it is on our performance, and there'll just be a small amount on the Network Rail piece.
Okay. All right.
And so,
different locations, so I'm going to let him talk on the credit rating point.
Yeah, morning, Joe. Just on the credit ratings, if you think about these contracts as being more longer term, lower risk, low level of contingent capital, therefore, are credit rating enhancing overall? It's not an issue. As we look forward, you're quite right in pointing out that historically contingent capital would be classified as debt and the dividends as free cash flow, but this is definitely moving into a very different regime.
Thanks, Ryan. Yeah, I think we're on the same page there. I'm just wondering if the fact that this is probably credit rating positive, it's helpful for your rating, whether that does free up somehow some more capital to be distributed.
Well, I think if you kind of think about the freeing up of capital that's then available for distribution, it's not really the ratings that would then impact us, because reminders, the RemainCo is going to be significantly deleveraged. We're not expecting to have high level of leverage, and as a consequence, we feel that RemainCo will have plenty of accessibility to the debt market, but we've got a targeted maximum cover ratio of 2x on the adjusted EBITDA measure. And so I'm not too sure that the ratings necessarily would impact that ability to kind of return more capital to shareholders. But okay, you're quite right, it should be ratings enhancing overall.
Thanks.
And we have one more question from the line of Chris Wright from HC Capital Advisors. Please go ahead.
Hi there. I just had three questions. So the first one was just on, can you maybe comment on the need for new investments in software to sort of deliver the efficiency requirements you've had placed upon you? And then my second question, so just so I understand, so will the actual route planning and rolling stock planning be planned by the centralized body, or will it be done by effectively your kind of central planning authority? And then the third one will be, so just understanding a little bit more on the saving capital on the bid costs. Is that because you can do it internally and you don't have to use professional services, or could you maybe just give a bit more clarity there?
Sure. Well, let me cover that one first. So I think it's a combination of both. I think, you know, when there was a lot of bidding going on, you know, we used to have to sort of flex up and down with professionals. There's a lot of professional economists looking at, you know, huge amounts of data. So we won't be using quite so many consultants on that, and we've got, you know, good qualified teams internally who will be able to look at this on a bit more of a consistent basis. I don't think it'll be feast and famine like it was before. So I think it'll be a combination of less on the consultancy side and a bit more stability, which makes it easier to plan. In terms of investment in systems, I mean, I think that we already have the systems to manage our metrics at the moment. There's quite a lot of detailed sort of systems in place. I think the focus will actually be on sort of investing in technology across the industry on things like fares, on things like, you know, managing the passenger flows, those kind of things. But there will clearly be an element of bureaucracy in managing the metrics. But we're already managing those to a greater extent. I think the point about route planning and, you know, that question. I mean, again, we've got to remember this is a white paper. So this is something for discussion and consultation, and this is where the direction of travel. It definitely hasn't got down into the detail of who's going to be managing, you know, control rooms and, you know, the route planning and the timetables and all that. But look, what I can say is that, you know, there already is there are already projects in place, particularly in the bigger stations, to sort of work together with Network Rail and the other industry partners as one team to make sure we're all working together and get the right people in the right place to make the right decisions. But I think, you know, part of this white paper is for us to start, everyone to start getting under the skin and start looking at some of that detail, and that will obviously become clearer over the next couple of years. Does that help, Chris?
Yeah, yeah, that's really good. So I guess as a bit of a summary, I guess you, because of the fact you've obviously made a lot of those kind of investments in the past anyway, it's not like that kind of obligation will be taken away from you necessarily. It's more about kind of trying to work out exactly who does what. But for now, kind of things are kind of staying a lot as they are.
Yeah, I think, and the national rail contracts are, you know, a two-year contract that will allow people to spend some good time thinking about what's being proposed in the white paper.
Okay. Cool. Thanks.
Thank you.
And as there are no further questions, I'll hand it back for any closing remarks.
Great. Well, thank you, everyone. Busy day for you all, I know, today. So thank you very much for spending the time talking about our new announcements. We're available if anyone has any follow-up questions. We'll let you get back to your day. Thanks very much.
This concludes our conference call. Thank you all for attending. You may now disconnect your lines.